Hey, good afternoon. Mark Tuohy in the chair with you today with the very sticky lips because they have a free hot chocolate in the kitchen, and I was drinking that, and it's just not good for keeping the lips limber. The lips limber. That's not easy to say. Let's get to somebody who can talk better than me. Our guest for Smart Speakers today, joining us, Genevieve Tomney, is principal at GT and Company, and Karen Stintz is a former city councilor and the chair of the TTC, now president and CEO of Variety Village and a federal Conservative Party candidate. Welcome to you both. Karen, let's start with you. We are the Canadian Press. Did what good journalists do. They went out, they surveyed provinces after the federal housing rights advisor. Basically, what are they called? The federal housing advocate said that shelter is a human right. And they were hoping that maybe provinces would fall in line and pass legislation that would make basically housing a human right. Manitoba said it recognizes the idea. Newfoundland and Labrador, though, was the only province that agreed with federal and international laws recognizing housing as a human right. I don't want to say housing isn't essential, and I think as a society, we need to come together to make sure that everybody has shelter, but I don't think it's a human right. Do you?
No. And I think that provinces have wisely not taken a position on that, because it's one thing to have general statements of principle, which, you know, you and I would both agree. Shelter is an important for communities, for individuals, for safety, for all kinds of reasons. Shelter is important. But when it comes down to making it a human right, it then means that if it's not available, then someone needs to be held accountable. And so can an individual take the province to the Human Rights Commission or the Human Rights Tribunal because they don't have a house? And then what is the remedy there? So as it becomes closer to the jurisdiction that is actually overseeing the matter, it becomes harder and harder to say that it's a human right, because then there's a remedy if you don't have it. And then what does that look like? So it's a bit tricky. And also to suggest that it's a right, so therefore you can pop a tent in a park and live there indefinitely, and then actually demand that you be serviced with washrooms and hydro and heat, then that becomes a whole other matter. And then how is the public good and the public space overall maintained? So it becomes extremely tricky to declare it a human right. And I think that as a principle, as aspirational, sure, but I wouldn't enshrine it into a law.
Genevieve Tomney, the Canadian Centre for Housing Rights, says, maybe the provinces could start by changing their rental and tenancy legislation to add a clause that says eviction should be an absolute last resort. I think it is already an absolute last resort. It's very hard to evict somebody.
Yeah. And, I think the spirit of the idea is right. And I think that we are hearing governments across the country say a lot of things and do a lot of things, quite frankly, that are consistent with the spirit of this statement. But I think that when we get so caught up in making these declarations and the semantics of it, and can you imagine, if a provincial government was going to declare this, how much back and forth there would be and time that would be spent on making sure that the wording of the legislation was absolutely note perfect, when in actual fact, we have a housing crisis on our hands and there are measures that need to happen right now in order to actually create shelter for people and create homes for people who badly need them. So to me, if there's no teeth in something like this, to me, there's no point. And we've talked a lot, for example, on this program about the federal government's municipal housing fund and how there have been, pretty serious strings attached to that funding flowing that do, in fact, I think, represent the spirit of this declaration. So I think that for me, it's more about action than words. It's about show me that you believe in the spirit of this rather than telling me.
Yeah, somebody once talked to me, and I can't remember which is positive and which is negative, but one type of rights that you have inherently because they just are. We all accept that. And another type of rights that basically this would be, a right to housing would be a right for me to have housing, but it takes away the rights from somebody else. Because for me to have housing, somebody would have to give it to me if I didn't, if I couldn't afford it myself. And I think that sets up, you know, a conflict there that becomes a challenge. Air passengers are upset with their airlines, apparently, to the tune of a backlog of complaints waiting to be adjudicated by the Canadian Transportation Agency, which was, if I understand correctly, specifically established to rule on complaints about air transportation. There's 71,000 complaints, Karen Stintz, awaiting this agency to deal with. 43,000 came in since the end of March. Like, we're generally unhappy. Were we biting off more than we can chew by saying, well, there should be a government agency that sort of rules on these complaints?
Yeah, it's one of those things, again, aspirationally, if you can't get a remedy from the carrier, you would want to figure out, is there anybody else that I can talk to? So notionally, it's not a bad idea. But, you know, 71,000 complaints, like that's a lot of complaints. And, you know, surely there's got to be a way of triaging those to say, OK, that's not a real complaint versus, OK, this is actually quite significant. And, you know, I can't believe that all 71,000 are the same magnitude. So it just seems bizarre. And it is bizarre. We create these agencies and then they take on a life of their own and nothing gets resolved. But more people are just angry when actually the intent of the agency was to help make people less angry. So it's a strange effect that it's created.
Genevieve, do we need an agency like that? If we did, let's imagine a world where we didn't have this agency. If I was upset with my air travel experience, I would complain to the airline. If they didn't resolve it, I would suck it up and go to a different airline next time, perhaps. Or I might sue them. And we have courts for that, although we know they're so overburdened, you're never going to get a court to this. But, you know, wouldn't the complaints just go away if we didn't have somebody to receive them?
I mean, no, I don't think so. And I do think that having an entity like this is important in Canada, because you hit on a really important point there, Mark, when you said, well, if I didn't like the way one airline was treating me, I'd choose another. Okay. We have basically two players in the game in Canada to choose from, right? There's a serious lack of competition in the airline industry in Canada. And I think that's part of the reason why an agency like this is so needed. You know, the fact that this volume of complaints exists in the first place, I think speaks to some serious upstream problems that we have, which I think you can tie back to, again, this lack of competition. So, you know, it's a bit of a catch-22, because trying to fix it on the tail end is important, but it's not solving the systemic problem. And then we have this added problem now that the fix on the tail end isn't working either. And so, you know, have either of you heard of any example of someone who has filed a successful claim through the CTA or through any other route? I haven't. So I think, you know, we've got two, you know, pretty serious problems happening here and not a lot of solutions for people. Because you mentioned small claims court, like that's not a solution for anybody right now either.
Well, we have so many problems with our court system. It's overburdened and underled. It's a nightmare. Maybe this is a role for artificial intelligence to go through 71,000 complaints, pile them into four different piles based on what they are, and then have one of the industry ministers who loves to call CEOs down to Ottawa to beat them over the head with this pile of paper. That would fix the problems, maybe? No? I don't know. We will come back in a moment with more smart speakers. Genevieve Tomney and Karen Stintz will be back. And, well, what are we going to put to them? We're going to talk to them about BC's failed attempt. As I am looking at the monitors right now, the Premier of British Columbia, David Eby, is out explaining why they are begging Ottawa to get them out of a mess that they created themselves with basically decriminalizing a significant drug usage in that province. And we will also talk about a lawsuit filed at Toronto's very own, no longer Ryerson, but now Toronto Metropolitan University, facing a lawsuit over anti-Semitism on campus, creating a dangerous environment for Jewish students. My name is Mark Tuohy. You're listening to The Rush on Newstalk 1010. Oh, you're back. It's Mark Tuohy in the chair this afternoon. Thanks for listening. We're in the midst of our Smart Speakers extravaganza with Karen Stintz, former city councillor in Toronto, TTC chair, and currently president and CEO of Variety Village and a candidate in whenever the upcoming federal election is for the Conservative Party. Genevieve Tomney is principal at GT and Company. Let's start with you, Genevieve. A student at the Toronto Metropolitan University is suing the university for failing to ensure a safe and respectful learning environment, alleging pro-Palestinian protests on campus and statements put online by students since the Hamas attack on Israel in October have led to a poisoned and anti-Semitic atmosphere. The suit is claiming damages or seeking damages of $1.3 million, alleging that the university has failed to enforce a dozen university policies that commit to the health and well-being of students. And the lawyer representing this student says the administration appears unable or unwilling to do anything about this particular environment. It doesn't appear that our elected officials either are willing or capable of doing anything about this environment. So this student's forced to go to court. All of that, of course, not yet proven in court, nor has the university filed its statement of defense. But is there any, I want to step back a little bit from the specifics of this allegation. Is this just something we're going to have to agree to disagree on and find a way to be Canadians and civil about that, which we're somewhat failing to do so now? Or is it possible that, you know, a wise judge could hear the evidence in this case and others and come up with, oh, well, the wisdom of Solomon, this is the right way?
Well, I think, a judge is going to have to, right? It's come to that point. But, you know, I hope that we can find a way to be Canadian and to find a way to peacefully get along with each other on Canadian campuses, because we're certainly not seeing that happening in the United States right now. I think it's, you know, a really, really difficult time for all kinds of students. And, you know, I think in this particular case, you know, TMU's become a bit of a flashpoint here. It's a downtown campus. It's a very diverse Toronto campus. And, you know, you have to hope that there is a way in all of this for people to be able to express themselves and you know, have their right to rally and to protest and to be, you know, truly upset and feeling the pain of their own communities right now without making other people feel unsafe. There has to be a way for us to be able to find that balance, and I don't think we're striking it right now. So I hope, you know, obviously this is going to go through the courts, and I don't want to weigh in on the merits of one particular legal case, but I do think that it should be forcing our universities, our post-secondary institutions, our governments to think really hard about, you know, what we need to do to ensure that these are safe places for all different kinds of students.
Yeah, let's take it out of the university environment for just a minute. Karen Stintz, you're a former politician. You sort of understand what's possible for politicians to do. The lawyer in this case says the administration and politicians seem to be either, and these are his words, unable or unwilling to make the situation safe. I'm not a lawyer. I suspect when he says that they might be unable, you know, recognizes more the reality of this is I'm not sure that we can get people to agree. Is there a space for politicians to try to do more to bring people together so that we can agree to disagree and not permanently harm each other?
Yeah, well, you know, I would say I do agree with the lawyer's statement that the politicians have been unwilling and that there is a debate about what is free speech and when it becomes hate speech. And so I think that it's not going to get solved on its own, and someone had to push the issue. And so I'm grateful to this individual, this student who's pushing this forward, because I don't look at those protests that are marching down Yonge Street and barricading Mount Sinai Hospital or on the 401 overpass as peaceful protests by any stretch of the imagination. And there, collectively, we've been unwilling to say that that is not acceptable. We talk about anti-Semitism being unacceptable, but when there's displays of it, then everybody seems reticent to do anything about it. And so I think that this case was going to come one way or another, because it has gone to a place where there is no space for peaceful demonstration. That's not what we're seeing on the streets. Mm-hmm. And it's not Canadian, because those demonstrators they refer to Canada as so-called Canada. They don't carry Canadian flags. They're not protesting for Canada. They're protesting for their cause. And they're using language that would be not acceptable for any other group, the language they use around the Jewish community. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting case, and I think it's well overdue. And I think that we should collectively pay attention to this case and how it unfolds, because I think it will be instructive to our civil discourse mm-hmm. and how we contain it and how we go about it and how we express our opinions.
Genevieve, do you want a quick comment on that, or can I move on to another topic?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's really well put. And I think, look, I've said this on this program before, my kids are Jewish, and I think about, you know, the environments that they go into all the time. And, you know, I know that there are parents out there who, you know, are sending their kids to university campuses and struggling with the idea of safety there. And I think we do need to really think about the words that we're using around each other, and whether they're doing more to divide us than they are to bring us together.
Stay with you just quickly. BC is looking to Ottawa to get it to amend its exemption that allows people to have drugs for adult use. And I'm really out of time. Does anybody think that Toronto should follow the BC example with the legalization or the decriminalization of opioid use? Quickly, Genevieve, then Karen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that we've seen out of this was that if this program was going to be successful, there had to be more prevention and more resources coupled with it. And Vancouver couldn't afford that. We know that the city of Toronto right now is dealing with a budget crisis. We can't afford it. I just don't think it's the time for us to be making decisions that are going to cause, you know, further drain on skim resources.
Karen Sintz, 30 seconds.
Yeah, just, you know, I think the decriminalization is one thing, but then the permitted public use of drugs in public spaces is another. And there are certain things we don't permit in parks, like vaping, smoking, drinking. And so I don't understand why it's so controversial to add drug use to that list. And so there's a piece of me that says, you know, this is, maybe a pilot project that went too far, as some do, and now it's an opportunity to rein it back in. The idea of preventing harm, I think, is still the aspirational goal of this program, but I think there has to be a way of doing it without causing the harm to the public spaces that we've seen.
Karen Sintz and Genevieve Tomney, thank you so much for being our smart speakers this afternoon. Always a pleasure talking with you. When we come back in the next hour, well, Toronto's mayor is pointing the finger for what? Well, pretty much everything at pretty much one guy, John Tory, former mayor of Toronto. What does he think about that? We've got some clips from earlier in the day. And how do you feel when politicians say, it wasn't me, it was him. Don't look at me, unless it's something that's happening now.